Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Jumpcast. My name is Nick, and I'm your host for today's show. And joining me, I have two wonderful guests. Firstly, we have Reese. How are you, Reese?
Hello, I'm very well, thanks. I'm good. Actually very excited to talk about this film. I think it's an interesting conversation, I think.
Joining me and Reese to review today's film as well is Dave. Dave, how are you?
I'm also good, just like Reese. I'm not as excited to talk about this film as he is.
Oh.
Yeah. The film they are both talking about, of course, is we are here to review Sam Levinson's Malcolm and Marie, which has been a hot topic on Twitter for, well, it feels like forever, because I feel like a lot of people got sort of advanced screenings and stuff for it. So it's kind of been like bubbling under for a few weeks now. But it's kind of all come to a head this weekend after it got its wide release on Netflix on Friday. But yes, we're here to review Sam Levinson's Malcolm and Marie. This episode is the first of three Jumpcast episodes that will be in your ears this week. Obviously today's show, and then on Friday Sarah and Barry will be continuing their Disney Odyssey. I think it's Fantasia 2000 that's the next show coming up, and then on Saturday there's a very different kind of Odyssey, as the Odyssey Awards show will be with you on Saturday. For those of you who don't know, that is Jump Cut Online's annual film awards show. And that said, that'll be going live on Saturday, either here on your usual podcast feed, or there's also a video version of that going up on YouTube as well, and you'll be able to find the link to that on Jumpcast and Jumpcut Online's respective Twitter feeds. So look out for that on Saturday. That's an extra show coming your way this week. We'll get straight into it, but again, as always, this episode is brought to you by our lovely patrons. If you go to jumpcutonline.co.uk, you can find a link to our Patreon subscription page there. And there's four different tiers there you can subscribe to now. We've included an even lower tier now, which you can subscribe for either £1 or $1, depending on where in the world you live. And you can support the site that way. But at the top tier, it gets you a shout out on here on every episode of Jumpcast. So Chris Wilson, Enon Films, Zoe Baines, Daryl Griffiths, Sam Luck, Orla Smith, Peter Hodgkins, Andy Meakin, Fabiana Rosas, Hamish Calvert, Martin Richmond, Manuel Bento, and Morten Mjölkeren. Thank you very much for your continued support, as the same for everybody else who either connects with the site online or on Twitter or subscribes to Patreon at any of the tiers. Thank you for your continued support, and we literally couldn't do what we do without you. So, Malcolm and Marie. I will give you both a quick synopsis, courtesy of IMDb. It's very brief. But a director and his girlfriend's relationship is tested after they return home from his movie premiere and await critics' responses. As I said, this was written and directed by Sam Levinson, and it stars literally two people in Zendaya and John David Washington. How much, a question for both of you, how much did the Twitter discourse put you off from watching this? For me personally, I had a real... not aversion is probably too strong a word, but I had a real sort of, I really kind of was putting off watching this, if possible, for as long as possible. And then obviously when we decided we were reviewing this for the show, I was like, okay, I've got to bite the bullet and do it. But I found the fallout of this relentless. I don't know about you two.
Very similar. I think because lots of people had early screenings somehow kind of through Netflix and other means, I guess.
Where was ours, Netflix?
Exactly.
Yeah, Netflix.
How come, Chief Netflix? but the discourse was frustrating because I couldn't kind of actually take part in it. And from the outside, it seemed like a very pedantic argument. And it seemed like it was... With my then kind of unknowing thought on just following the Twitter conversation without having seen the film, it felt like a lot of critics... getting on their high horse a bit about the film, being like, oh, the film is trying to have a go at us as critics, and having now watched it, I can't help but feel that the critics are a little bit silly for doing that. It feels like that, like, I think you said it to me, Nick, in one of our Twitter DM chats about it, that the film criticizes critics for doing a certain thing, and then in the Twitter discourse, critics are doing that same thing it's criticizing.
The exact same thing.
And it's like, do you not realise the irony of the situation? And you need to kind of take a step back and realise that it's not all about critics. And I posted a joke about it. I thought that was very funny myself.
It was a good. I gave that.
It was the clip from Arrested Development when Job and his magician crew say, "We demand to be taken seriously," and there's a guy dressed as a wizard and like a clown and stuff like that. And I think that the critics literally are that stupid magician crew. That, you know, you are not making a film here. You are not. Criticism is not this fine art form, I don't think. Even though I'm a writer myself, I write reviews and stuff, I don't think that it should be treated in the same regard as writing a film or creating a film like Malcolm Marie. I think we are separate from that, and the fact that so many people took it so seriously, to me, is very...
And so personally.
Yeah, well, took it very personally.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's very ironic and just very unbecoming of a lot of film Twitter, as it's come to be known.
Would you prefer to say then, Reese, that your expectations were sort of hindered by that?
Not really. Not really, because the people I trusted said it was really good. So I was looking forward to it. And I know someone I talked about regularly, she gave it 5 stars. She said it's one of the favorite films of the year. So, I mean, yeah, Nick clearly disagrees. Dave, he disagrees. But for me, I was really actually looking forward to watching it and being able to finally see what all the fuss was about.
What about yourself, Dave? Was your expectation sort of poisoned by Twitter, as Twitter does with a lot of things?
Luckily, I kind of stayed out of this. So, no. But all I kind of knew beforehand was that there was a film that was made in the middle of the pandemic. That's all I... And then I try and stay out of reviews and... say so before until I've watched the film, and then I delve into it like a loser. But and I've literally in the last couple of hours or day have opened up a world of hate and madness. it's crazy.
Yeah,
and I think some like a lot of the critics as recent have taken it quite personally. Probably, which is not right. But we'll get into that, I think.
I think there is probably an argument that there's one critic in particular who could probably take it quite personally, who shall remain unnamed.
Maybe two. I think there were two.
They were almost, both of them were pretty much almost name-dropped. May as well have been name-dropped in the film. We won't name-drop them. We'll save them that embarrassment. But I think two people in particular maybe have an argument to say that, they take offense. I think everybody else needs to sort of...
I knew who it was straight away as well, and I was like,
yeah,
I know
I did
about.
As well.
Yeah, I knew as well.
Yeah, we all did. Which, well, maybe the film does have a point then.
Well, yeah, we'll but see. Also the writer of the film and the director also loves his own words. So in the way, they're just as bad as each other. So.
Yeah.
So we'll actually talk about the film rather than discourse, because everyone's sick of the discourse.
There's so much discourse. That was only part of the discourse, wasn't it?
I feel like the discourse will sort of seep into all the conversations we have as we go along. Yeah. But let's actually talk about some of the sort of the film. In a film like this, where it's literally just a closed environment with two characters, I think we have to start with the performances and work from there. For me, I thought both of them were astonishing. Mm-hmm. I know that some people liked Zendaya's performance a lot more than John David Washington's. But from what I've seen, I think everybody is in unison in saying that Zendaya in particular was incredible. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes, definitely agree. Yeah. I think she has the harder job in this film in terms of she is just meant to kind of play the role of someone who is constantly being, I don't want to say the word abused, but she's just kind of...
I would.
She's the kind of punching bag for John, for Malcolm in the film. And she is just forced to take lots of criticism and just kind of sit there as he indulges his own kind of whims. And he kind of has these massive rants and he really gets involved into kind of why he's so impassionate about his film and the reaction to it. And I think the way she just kind of deals with it in a largely very quiet, kind of methodical, thoughtful way is really, really good. And I think...
Apart from the final sort of monologue at the end when she sat on the bed, which I think was stunning, and I think that's a monologue and a scene that a lot of particularly women have taken really to heart.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of female critics responding to that scene in particular, saying like that scene is absolutely perfect in explaining the woman's viewpoint in that scenario and in that situation. Like, that final sequence does it perfectly. But I think her best scene other than that was probably the scene when she was sat in the bath and John Washington was John David Washington was being an absolute
telling her all these stories about his old women. Like, oh my god.
And she does so much, again, like we said, for such a dialogue heavy film, she is almost completely silent in that scene. But she's still doing so much work in just her facial. Like, she's even completely still. She doesn't move.
Yeah, she's completely bare as well.
She's not even like crying. It's not like that she's full of tears. Right? She's just doing so much work with just a dead and like a wooden dead face.
Yeah,
it's really hard to explain, but I was absolutely floored by that scene and the way that she was responding to the way he was acting in that scene.
Yeah,
do you agree with Zendaya, Dave? Absolutely. I don't know if this has missed the boat for this year's award circuit. I'm not sure if it's released too late, but if not, I would expect to see her whenever she's eligible. I'd expect to see her sweeping in some nominations. I would have thought.
I think she started. It's definitely a film of two halves for me. John David Washington takes the first half with his performance, and her performance is more slow building throughout the film. Like you said, it ends with that monologue on the bed, but also the monologue, her audition scene as well.
That's my favorite. I think.
Oh, I thought that was great. I thought it was so good.
Did you get psyched out by it? Did you think it was legitimate, or did you think she was acting?
I had an inkling that it was an acting, just because it was so kind of left field at that point. For her character. But I think I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, "Oh," at the end, kind of thing. But yeah, she's very strong. Like you said, that she does so much without doing nothing, which is a great compliment for any actor, I think.
I think her performance just felt so legitimate, even not the stuff she was necessarily saying, but that the tiny little mannerisms she brought to the character and the way she reacted to things that he said, just like in her facial expressions.
And so subtle.
And her tiny little sort of like put downs, just like one word put downs, and really like quick witticism, like in response to stuff that he was saying. I was absolutely floored by Zendaya's performance. I think it's my favorite performance I've seen of anyone for a long time.
Ooh.
I love it. I loved her performance so much. She's not an actress I've seen a huge amount of. I know she's not done a huge amount of stuff sort of as an adult actor. I know she did a lot of stuff sort of. Was she a Disney child?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. But I've seen obviously the Spider-Man films. I haven't seen Greatest Showman. There's something about it that's
Nick.
It's genuinely worth watching, mate. I'm gonna be honest.
There was another thing where there was a load of Twitter discourse about it, and I was like, oh, it's so relentless.
It should all be positive because it's fantastic.
But yeah, so I haven't seen that, and I've also annoyingly I watched the first episode of Euphoria, which Sam Levinson also created, I believe.
He did
created and wrote.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I watched the first episode of that, which she was great in, but annoyingly I was watching it on Sky box sets, and I watched the first episode and then it disappeared. They took it off and I was like, oh. So I never got round to getting past the first episode, but it has come back on Sky recently, I think, so I will be delving into that.
I've watched Euphoria, and Zendaya is genuinely fantastic in it, like throughout. She has lots of the similar kind of things she does in this, where she has got a really expressive face. I also think she's got a very expressive mouth. Like, her mouth moves in very kind of subtle ways, and she can really kind of, like, a little like, are you sure about that? Kind of facial expression is really kind of well used both in this and in Euphoria.
And that's the thing I really picked up on from, sorry to interrupt you, Reese, but the things that, like, John David Washington was having is, like, he was saying what he thought were really profound things and, like, real, like, put downs, and she would just brush it off with a smirk or a little one-off sort of, like, side-handed comment and stuff. Like, it felt so authentic. I loved it.
Well, his dialogue's so long and sometimes so, what's the word I'm looking for here? Indulgent, that they couldn't just rely on him. They had to, you know, cut away, and her responses are so good, like, so little. So, yeah, just genius. But those, the acting in this is brilliant.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say.
I've seen some. I've seen some people say that they were less of a fan of John David Washington in that he was maybe a bit sort of over the top.
I would say exhausting.
Yeah, but I think for me, I think that's just indicative of the character. I don't think that I'd put that down as a negative against John David Washington at all.
No,
personally.
I think that was kind of the point, was that he was so kind of, like I said earlier, kind of self-indulgent about his work, that he was so kind of high and mighty that it did come across. But I also think as well, John David Washington, in the films I've seen him in, like in this, in Tenet, for example, he's such a physical performer. Like everything he does is very kind of dramatic and very intentional. Mm. And the one, and he has that kind of scene when he rants for about, it felt like about half an hour, when he's kind of walking in and out the house, screaming about filmmakers and asking all those questions while she was just lying there on the sofa. Like that was when he used his energy the most, and he was like kicking and screaming quite literally. And I personally, I really like a physical performer like that. I think they can really kind of dominate a scene. And I think they, like Levinson, really understood that early on, like when they get home and he puts that song on and then dances around the kitchen. And I'm thinking like he can really command the camera. Like he, you just gravitate towards him and want to see what he's going to do. And I think they used his energy really, really well, I think.
Yeah, and it was interesting to contrast that right in the beginning of the film when Zendaya was a bit sort of more timid. Like we saw her go to the bathroom and she looked sort of tired and exhausted from whatever had happened that night at the premiere. And she was just going about her sort of like, in inverted commas, like housewife chores. Like she was doing doing the laundry and doing the cooking. And so there's a real contrast there. But then I thought later as the film progressed, they sort of met in the middle. And I think both of them are equally as sort of physical performances. And I think that's a large part of why they have so much chemistry on screen.
I'm so glad that he toned down in the second half. I couldn't stay with that character for an hour and 45 like that. I'm sorry. It would have been too much for me.
I loved my favourite bit of his physical acting, by the way, was when he went outside and was just like kicking and
he was fencing and stuff,
amongst all the, whatever it was, all the I don't know.
The
what
grass,
it was,
kind the of, dead
yeah,
grass or
long
whatever,
grass
yeah.
or something like that. But yeah, that was literally my favourite thing. It was really funny at that, but it's kind of like dotted. There's bits of comedy like dotted and sort of fed through here. Absolutely. I think like it's not just a, I've seen some people describe it as, Dave, you may agree with this, that it's just like a relentless, like, tearing and like, microscopic look at, like, the trials and tribulations of a relationship. Mm. But I found there was some real points of sort of levity that might not be, like, funny in, like, in a comedic in a traditional sense, but, like, even to stuff like the way John David Washington was eating his mac and cheese. And just like
he was like an animal, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was like a child. Like it wasn't like an animal. It was like a child. Yeah.
Like a child. Okay.
Yeah, there was little bits and pieces just like that were just like subtly sort of weaved into the fabric of the film that I was like, yeah, this is really funny. And it's kind of, it needs these kind of things to sort of, as I said, because there is a lot of hard-hitting sort of themes and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. It needs a bit of levity to sort of create a bit of a balance.
But I also think as well, it does kind of in with like the mac and cheese scene, for example, when he kind of shouts at her for about 2 minutes, just when she's not even in the room. And then she comes out and she's like, are you really shouting at me? Are you eating mac and fucking cheese? And it was like, but then I could see that being an actual thing that real couples would have. And it's like, oh, you're eating a burger and having a go at me. Like, pick a side here. Like, what you want to focus on? Is it food or is the argument? Like, I think that was a really kind of funny, but also kind of sadly real look at an actual kind of argument
I do think, again, we can talk about this now, I suppose, the writing and the script writing. I suppose, again, I've seen a lot of people saying that they thought it was very self-indulgent on Sam Levinson's part and very sort of...
It was.
Because obviously John David Washington, to a degree, again, if we're going to fall into the trap that Malcolm says, is this a part of Sam Levinson sort of represented, mirrored on screen? But I did think...
Well, that's true for any writer, isn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, that's the point he makes, that there's a part of any writer and director goes into the film, obviously, because it's their experiences, their...
Well, that's why she's so angry that she doesn't get a thank you or...
Get cast.
Yeah. Or even get any kind of recognition that's her words, that's her story.
But so I was saying the Yeah, so like that kind of stuff people have had an issue with, that is all sort of self-indulgent and pretentious and stuff. But I thought the actual, like Reese, you said about the mac and cheese thing, the stuff that was focused on the relationship side of thing seemed really authentic to me. Yeah, it's just the little things that I'm sure everybody who's been in a long-term relationship has experienced, where it's just like little things like, you know, how to push each other's buttons and the way that they react to one another and stuff like that. It was just that part of the script felt really authentic to me.
Mm. I found it really uncomfortable in places.
I think that was completely intentional. I think, again, I read a description by Sam Levinson of the film, as he said, I wanted to do it as if we put two snakes in a jar together and then put the lid on with no intention of letting them out.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of exactly how it plays out. So you kind of, and yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
These arguments have been building for a while, haven't they? So they all...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, this is not... Yeah, it plays out that it's the... she has a very simple premise that she's upset that he didn't thank her in his speech. But yeah, there's issues here that have been bubbling for... months, years, however long their relationship has been.
Yeah.
Did you take issue with the writing from kind of the, what a lot of people have taken issue from the kind of film criticism aspect and the arguments of artist and art and that kind of thing?
I'll let Dave take this one. Thoughts on it.
I don't have any problems with the way the amount of it is the what I've got a problem of it. Mm-hmm. I haven't got problem, like some bits I really liked. I liked the bit when he couldn't find his credit card to pay the paywall to find his review. I found that great. I also found the bit of dialogue about when he's talking about the review about it's written by, because he's a black man and it doesn't need to be political, but white critics are trying to make it something that it's not. I found that all very interesting and quite enjoyable, to be honest. I just felt it's just too much.
It's very stacked. Like, if you actually think about it, there's so many themes that are, like, thrown at you, like, but not just thrown at you sort of, like, willy-nilly, that are, like, right, here's a five-minute monologue on it. Like, there's stuff like mental health, and obviously drug addiction, like, betrayal and cheating and stuff like that. Like, as I said, art and artistry and what art means to different people and who has ownership of art.
Theory gets thrown
all,
in there.
It's all very interesting because they kind of throw in both sides of the arguments as well. Yeah. So you can't sit here and say it's all against critics, because then, on the other hand, they're making light of that and taking the kind of the piss that they're not, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it completely works? No, on a personal.
That's the thing. Like,
I had trouble connecting to it. Like, I've got no problem slagging critics off. Go for it, because a lot of them are dickheads. So.
Malcolm has arrived.
Yeah. And that's myself included.
Don't be too down on yourself.
Thanks, mate.
It's just, I understand what you're saying, but honestly, I'm not being hyperbolic here. I could have sat and watched them. I could have sat and watched them sort of like dissect the world for hours.
Oh, that's where we differ.
As a pair of characters, you can say what you like about whether you think they're nice characters and likable characters, which I don't think either of them are particularly. Certainly John David Washington over Zendaya. But as in terms of engaging characters, I thought, as I said, I could sit and watch those two bounce off each other and fight and talk through the world for hours. I could have watched another 2-hour film of it straight away afterwards. I found them absolutely
I do disagree there. Characters. I think I'm going to put out that I did really enjoy the film. I thought it was really, really good. However, I did think that it was maybe one or two monologues too many for me. I think it really eventually, once you kind of realize the rhythm of the film is going to be, they get back, they're all good, argument. They reconcile the argument, argument. They reconcile the argument, they argue. And it was just, it was always that kind of back and forth of when's the next I'm going to hit. And I think for me, it just went too long.
One of the issues I did have with it is how it felt like a play, in that it was act one,
definitely,
is argument one, act two is argument two. And the way that they sort of knitted Act 1 and Act 2 together felt a bit jarring at points. Not necessarily, but like how they jumped from one argument to the next felt maybe a little sort of unnatural and jarring at points.
Well, all Malcolm wanted to do was fuck.
Yeah, literally all he did. But but again, like Zendaya warned us right at the beginning that she said nothing fruitful is going to come of this at all. Like, because you, Malcolm, you don't know how to sort of douse fire in an argument or whatever, whatever turn of phrase she used. She literally warned him and the audience that nothing is going to happen here. This is just going to go on forever. It really did feel like a play to me. And I don't know whether that's because of the like closed setting and it just being two people. And we've mentioned the sort of monologue style dialogue, which is all the way through the film. Was it the same to you guys?
I think this would be a great play because you'll be so in it as well. Like we had a chat the other day about One Night in Miami, the other day with Reese and Fiona. And theatre feels so much more personal than film.
Yeah.
That this would have been in a theatre would have been I don't know, really tense. For being on film, I just was a little bit bored by the end of it.
You see, that's interesting because if I think of another sort of theatre adaptation that recently it was Ma Rainey, and that didn't work for me as an adaptation to film. Like, I don't feel the energy was transferred well in the way that it was shot and the way that it was all set up. I think the performances were great, and again, there were some really powerful monologues from particularly from Chadwick Boseman. And Viola Davis's performance was great, but I felt that it lost somewhere. Something was lost in translation from stage to screen somewhere. Whereas this, I don't know whether it was the camera work, but I felt completely immersed in the argument in a way that, like you said, if you were sat in the front row of a theater and watching it on stage, that you feel like you're there observing it. And I really did get that same. For me, again, personally, I really did get that same experience where that is an issue I have a lot of times with. Play adaptations for film is that they lose that. Whereas this felt like a play, and obviously because it's not an adaptation, that might have been part into that, but I felt completely immersed in the argument and in the setting and in the house, and I felt like I was there. I felt like I was getting a lift home from them, like, and I was sat in the back of the car, just like, yeah, like screaming at each other in the front seats, and I was just there, like, awkwardly on my phone, like, "Hello, can this end, please?"
I've got the film on now, kind of on silent on my TV, just as we're talking, and I'm just kind of watching the framing of it, and like, I think, like you said, it just feels like you're there because I've just seen a scene where they argue in the kitchen, and the way that they kind of circle the island and the camera circles them. Really deliberate, and you can tell that they've worked on the kind of the choreography really deliberately and made it kind of this thing that's meant to be as engaging as it can be. And I also want to shout out as well, I think the production design, the house is amazing.
Oh, it's stunning.
Like, it's kind of stunning. Maybe it's a big claim to make, but it looks kind of like the house from Parasite, that kind of it has that same feel that it has been built to have this conversation in you know. And I think it looks really cool, and I think they use the whole space really well, and you kind of get a picture of the geography of it perfectly throughout. You never get kind of lost or misplaced or whatever. I think it's just the whole thing is really well put together, and the way that the camera kind of deliberately follows both of them equally. Like, you might see Malcolm's reaction for one thing she says, but then you might see her deliver a point, and then you go back to Malcolm for his point, and then she reacts to it, and you just see both sides of it very equally, and I think they balance it really, really well.
I completely agree. I don't know, was the building purpose built, or was it just something that they stumbled across? Do we know?
Just reading about it seems they found like a ranch with, so they filmed this in a pandemic, so they the actors and the crew lived apart in separate buildings for 10 days, so to isolate, and then this was the main house in the middle of it, I guess. So they had 2 weeks of filming stuck in this house, so they could all spend time on shots and the pacing and the setting of shots, and I think that really shows because visually it's very good,
beautiful,
like it is beautiful, and the black and white it works really nicely.
Did John David Washington and Zendaya live together then? Is that what
they must to believe? Well, and they must have, I like guess. Little outhouses. They couldn't.
That could have helped the performances.
Yeah,
couldn't
I was
it?
Just about to say, if that was kind of like an experience, and they were kind of as soon as they went off set, they were still spending time together, and they could, I don't know their acting techniques and stuff, but if they could sort of just embody their characters, sort of living together off camera for a couple of weeks as well, that might have been really sort of helpful and useful to them. I think from what I've read again, I think like it felt a really collaborative experience between the two actors and Sam Levinson. I've seen a lot of people take issue with the fact that Sam Levinson is utilizing black people to put his voice through and put it through a black filter.
I said that to my wife, and then she did point out that I think the producers are all like Zendaya and John David Washington. Katie Washington, which is the sister of John, they're all producers. So I like to think that they had a voice.
Yeah, I think Zendaya has been on record multiple times. I read an interview with her where she said this was like, it's Sam Levinson's name is the writer and director, but this was a completely collaborative thing. Like, even from the point where he pitched the idea to them, like they even wrote part of the script and story together. Like, it wasn't...
Well, they were locked down together. They must have had that kind of conversation.
So I would like to think that the argument that this is a white man utilizing black voices, black sort of vessels for him to shout his grievances with the world.
Well, there's one point when the guy's actually talking about that Barry Jenkins is made Moonlight and he's not a gay man.
That was. And then there are a few lines of dialogue that were a bit icky, and so, that was one in particular.
So they're trying to make a point in the film. It's self-aware, isn't it? It's referencing itself the whole time.
The line about Barry Jenkins and like, was Moonlight only a huge success because Barry Jenkins isn't gay or something? It was something like that. I saw that popped up as a screenshot on Twitter by somebody, and I was like, is that somebody pointing fun at the film and has made a meme, or is that literally a legitimate line of dialogue from the film?
I feel like they could have cut some out. Some of the dialogue they could have just taken some out. For me,
at the same time, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I do think he does raise a good point in terms of like when Malcolm rants about how one of the critics says, oh, he's the next Spike Lee, he's the next Barry Jenkins. Like, why isn't he never compared to the next Spielberg? Like, you know, they do have a point where it does feel like kind of black filmmakers are cornered off into their own area of black cinema rather than just comparing them to everyone else. Like, you know, why isn't Ryan Coogler the next, I don't know, J.J. Abrams, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they are frequently pigeonholed. I don't think through any kind of intention, but they do frequently have to be compared against other black filmmakers, not just any old filmmaker. And I think that is, and the same thing for female filmmakers as well. Like, oh, who's the next Greta Gerwig? And it's like, it doesn't matter, you know? And I think that point that he made there was, I think, very well delivered. That's why I bought into that.
I think there were a lot of, but again, people have taken issue with a lot of the points he said, but I'm not saying I agreed with everything he said, but again, I think there were a lot of points that I found were sort of quite timely and pertinent. He did say, like, some of the stuff he delivered it in and in the way that he kind of was putting his point across wasn't necessarily maybe the most sort of helpful or constructive way, but a lot of the stuff he was saying, this might make me coming in line for a bit of beef on Twitter, but I don't know. Maybe I agreed with Malcolm on a lot of the things. I think the idea of people saying like he had about like what is the director trying to say with this, and it's like, well, no, like, or no, that's no, the point he was making, that's not what they were trying to say. They were saying that the director has done this because he thinks this, and it's like, well, how on earth would you know? Like, you're not in my head.
Yeah, but does everything have to have a point? Can't it just be entertained?
Yeah, I don't think it does. I think, again, John David Washington says a line of dialogue in the film, something like, a film doesn't need a point. It just needs, like, heart and electricity.
He's saying what critics are always trying to make a political point out of black films.
And, like, not everything has to have a meaning. Sometimes a film is just good enough to exist.
Yeah.
Within itself. And I think for a lot of people, I've seen people have saying like, this is literally nothing happens, it's just boring and there's no resolution, and my point will be, well, yeah, we'll look back to that bit of dialogue that John David Washington said, that Malcolm said, where he said it doesn't need a point or a purpose or a resolution. Like, you have to retain some mystery. And that's where the excitement in art comes, and as Zendaya said, the excitement in relationships come from, that there is mystery and unknownness surrounding it. And as long as there's sort of heart and electricity, which I got from the characters, because I really bought into them. Not everybody did, so that might be where the issue is. But, like, I got enough from the film because I bought into those characters and I found them engaging and charismatic enough to like keep my attention for an hour and 45 minutes. And as I said, I could have watched more of them. Mm. Yeah. Going back to what we said about the house design, we need to talk about the cinematography as well, because I think those things are kind of sort of linked together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is a beautiful looking film.
It is. Agreed. Stunning. Yeah. There's kind of...
Yeah, go on.
There's lots of things that, again, do link to, I think, the point of the film, where I think there are so many cool shots in the film, but I never really spent time thinking, oh, what does that shot mean? It's just a cool-looking shot, you know? And it's just, I felt like there was just, he was using his camera to just kind of present these really, really picturesque images. And then there were some, obviously, that were intentional, like the very final shot of them two stood kind of outside on the hill together, but kind of separate, but not together. Like, no, sorry, together, not, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
It was slightly off-centered as well.
Yeah, wasn't it? And it's like, you know, you're wondering what's next for these characters. And there were some deliberately kind of meaningful shots in there, but I do think that it does kind of, it's a very stylish film that I think does take advantage of it being a stylish film, and it doesn't want it to be anything more than just being cool looking, I think.
Yeah, they took advantage of the one location, and they
absolutely
they used every inch of the place. It felt, I know I said to Nick before we start recording, in some ways it felt like a very, like a, I can't believe I'm about to say this, a student film. Because when you're a student and you're trying to make a short film, you normally only have one location and you're all in it together. So you're kind of all discussing ideas together. Kind of what it felt like. The actors were there, the director, like you said, who's the cinematographer? Marcel Rev, who I've never heard of. But they must have all put their ideas across and came up with this. And that must have been so freeing as a filmmaker. So rewarding.
As well, yeah.
And they had had that time, and they didn't have anyone, or probably a studio, interfering at that point. It was just the people on set, the boots on the floor.
I felt like the camera was almost its own sort of character in itself, and I think that kind of contributed to the idea and the sensation I got that I was sort of stuck in the middle of this, because there's so many sort of smooth camera motions. I said, as like you said, Reece, the example where we circle the kitchen counter and the way that we follow them through the corridors,
like jazz, stuff like that. The music,
yeah.
I just felt very free. So it felt like it was, like so just observational and there and free flowing, and had its own agency to just go and capture the whatever raw moment it wanted to go and capture, and I loved that about it.
I really liked how it was. It had lots of long shots as well. Like, it wasn't just kind of cut between the two. It was lots of let this play out as naturally as it can. And I think I liked how it started with a nice kind of one take. It was only about 5 minutes or so, but it was just him dancing around and she was having a smoke outside. And the way the camera kind of panned back and forth between the two of them was really, really nice.
Do you not think sometimes it was style over substance?
Yeah, sometimes, but I think that's what sometimes. I think having watched kind of Euphoria, and I've watched Assassination Nation as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He is a very stylish filmmaker. And I think sometimes in Euphoria, it definitely comes out where he does prioritize things looking cool over having a certain meaning. But personally, I'm fine with it because it looks cool. And I'm a very kind of easy to please film watcher. As long as something looks cool, I don't care kind of how they're used. Yeah. So maybe that's just my own kind of take on things. But
I just talk about Sam for a minute. I did like the bit when Zendaya took the piss out of John David Washington for being a privileged, like his parents were well off and blah blah blah, and then you've got this director whose dad's a famous film director who made Rain Man. That made me chuckle.
I think again, yeah, a lot of criticism has been pointed at Sam Levinson, but I do think he takes a pop at himself on multiple occasions in this film. Like you said, that's a really good example, Dave, where it's like you're complaining about you're the victim of all this, the white criticism, but like you are also part of the white establishment in Hollywood. Like I think he's very self-aware of the points he's making. And I think he does take a pop at himself occasionally. I think if it had just been a preaching piece about how he's been unfairly treated by critics who like didn't like Assassination Nation and he's getting a bad rap.
I hate that name for that film. Just call it Assassination.
Assassination Nation.
It's
It makes it a mouthful. But yeah, I do think there is obviously some self-awareness here.
The bit when he reads the review of his film, and then he goes like, "Oh, this is not what I meant. It's not what I meant." Even though it's a positive review, and Zendaya's all the way through like, "This is a good review. Why are you so angry about it?"
Yeah.
She literally called it a masterwork or whatever.
Masterpiece. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's again kind of him. He had a go at critics for reading too much into his films, and then he spends time reading too much into their critic review of him, and it's just like he's very aware that this is a two-way argument, and he is as bad as they are, really.
Yeah. That's the thing I got from it. I 100% can see the argument that some of that Malcolm's monologues came over as pretentious and self-loving and completely sort of tone deaf. But like, I also think there's enough about his character that sort of humiliates him, that like from the stuff he says or Zendaya says to him, that there's a nice balance struck for me, at least.
Well, have you the Guardian piece on it is quite interesting. The line at the beginning is how using black actors to vent white frustration sinks Malcolm and Marie. Sam Levinson's black and white Netflix two-hander turns into a self-indulgent excuse to whine about critics through the mouthpiece of John David Washington. I don't agree with that.
Neither do I. I read the thing and I was like, I can see what he wants to say, but for me, that's not what Malcolm Marie was about personally. But then I think he was a black writer, so I feel I can't really.
Well, yeah, as white critics,
white guys, yeah. I don't know how much we can say about that, but yeah, I do. I think there's enough of a balance for me personally. I think there's enough of a balance struck between John David Washington saying these things and also fun being pointed at John David Washington's character for people to be like, yeah, this is completely self-indulgent, nonsensical, like bad-tasting thing. I think there's enough on both sides to counteract that.
Yeah, well, you know, films are never a bad thing when people are discussing them, are they? Like this.
Well, no. Well, yeah. The old saying is any press is good press, isn't it?
Mm. Like, exactly.
I think a lot of people will probably watch this out of interest and being like, "Oh, why is there so much heated debate about this?"
I bet the numbers on Netflix are great. I bet they're rubbing their hands together about all the. Because it's free publicity in the end of the day.
It is.
For good or bad.
I do wonder. I think I had this conversation with someone on Twitter, actually, where they said that they felt that the film would do really well with like the film Twitter circles, but it wouldn't do as well with the general audience. And I think it's the opposite.
I think it's going to be the opposite.
I think it'll do really well with people who aren't as aware of the drama behind the scenes and just watch it as this really, really well-done play between these two people in a relationship. And I think it'll work better out of the discourse than it does in the discourse.
Yeah,
personally.
I think, the bubble of people who are very aware of film criticism and film critics as people and individuals that they follow on Twitter and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I think I agree with you, Reese, that I think it's going to do a lot better with general audiences. Because I don't think anybody, even people have been like, this film is absolute trash. Like, they've never said that. It's trash for like as a piece of filmmaking and like to watch two great actors playing off one another. Like their issues come from another sort of point of view, which I don't think, like general public will be too privy to or care about. That's the thing as well. Like, do we care about that sort of thing? Like, it's again, like we always encourage people, like art, the whole point of art is that you can sort of express yourself and like,
well, yeah,
but really care that much.
But cinema's meant to entertain, and is it entertaining?
You see, I found it.
I thought it was mostly. I kind of lost interest towards the end.
Yeah,
but I think it was mostly very well done. And
because for me, cinema's meant it's meant to connect with the heart or the head, and if it doesn't connect with one of those two, then what's the point of it? And would you want to go back and rewatch this?
I'd go back and rewatch.
Would you?
Would. I think I would. Yeah,
I'd rather go back and watch Cats. Then rewatch this.
No, you do not. No, you do not. treat yourself better, Dave.
You're better than that.
I would. It's not a thing I'm going to go put on again like this week, but 100% in the future, I think it's definitely something.
Nick, at the beginning of this conversation, you said you would watch another 2 hours of this.
I would.
True.
Like,
he did.
If it was if the film was another 2 hours longer and it was a 3 hour and a half hour film, I wouldn't.
Oh God, no.
But like
Malcolm Marie, the Snyder Cut.
The Snyder Cut, yeah.
And you know what? There probably is, because they had so much time to film.
Yeah, I bet there is loads of stuff that was kind of sort of like off the cuff, sort of like improv stuff that just didn't make it. I bet there's an absolute room full of film footage.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot more to talk about. I feel like we've covered the main thing, like what makes it such a great film, but then for me personally, but also then what the problems are with it. Is there any problems we haven't addressed that you had with it? Because I don't have too many. For me, as I said, it was kind of how the acts, in inverted commas, were sort of glued together. Didn't feel very sort of natural. But apart from that, honestly, I can't think of anything else negative to say about it. I don't know if there's anything that you two thought that we haven't talked about.
I think I did mention it earlier. I think for me, it's just the way that it jumps from argument to non-argument, and the way they can kind of flip between, this is an argument about career, but now it's about the relationship, but now it's about both, now it's about neither. And it's just like, it was a very kind of deliberately, obviously, monologue heavy film. And it just felt like they needed a bit more, like you said, between the acts, kind of just more of a link between the different arguments. And I think it was, for me, I think I got the idea that the film was meant to be just an amalgamation of a year's worth of arguments. So this, what you see in the film, doesn't necessarily happen in one night. This is just a collection of things they've argued about over the years, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's all manifesting itself in
exactly. But I think my main thing was probably the clunkiness of just the way that the arguments kind of connected, and also I think it does just have one too many arguments for me. I think if you shaved off 20 minutes, I think you'd be fine.
It did feel like it had a natural end where it kind of faded to black, didn't it?
And then it did.
It came back again for another 15 minutes.
There was also, I don't know if it was, maybe it was my TV, but there was a point when they did argue and it stopped. And then the screen like flashed white. Was that my TV?
No, that did
okay,
happen.
Right, fine. Yeah. Okay. I thought that was really weird.
Dave, you're probably the man to go to with criticisms about this film. Is there anything we haven't spoken about that you want to get off your chest about, Matt?
No, I totally agree. The pacing for me, the length. I didn't enjoy spending an hour and 45 minutes with these characters. And it's funny to say, because they were so good at these characters, but I found I found the first half exhausting. I did not like his character at all. I didn't like the belittling and the put downs to her. I found it hard to watch. I found him a very unlikable character, and I didn't really want to spend any more time with him. but that's my problem. Like the length of it, I got really bored by the end of it.
That's fair enough. And I think another thing he says is we all enjoy different elements and different aspects of art, and that's absolutely fine. And different forms, but I will ask you for your rankings out of five stars.
Go Reese first.
Reese, yeah, I'll come to you first.
I do want to shout out. I wrote some my kind of favourite lines in the film, because I did like the way that they develop these characters and their kind of past life just within an hour and a half. And there was one that really stuck with me that was really funny and also kind of like sad, where when Zendaya departs and goes outside for a bit, and she's like, where Malcolm's like, where the hell did you go? And then she says, I went for a pee. Why didn't you go to the bathroom? And he's, oh, because I didn't grow up with a backyard and the novelty hasn't worn off yet. And I thought that was just a really cutting look at kind of like the difference between their kind of childhoods. Like, you know, she grew up in a really rough kind of upbringing, he was very well off. But that's just a little aside I'd really liked. I think I gave the film 4 stars, and I'm going to stick with 4 stars, because I don't think while it's not perfect, I think I've got lots of issues with it. I do think that it's very well made and the performances are so good that, like you, Nick, I could definitely watch them argue for quite a long time. I just think in this film the arguments were so exhausting that it does kind of overstay its welcome slightly, but that doesn't take away from how good the two of them were. So for me, 4 stars.
Dave, have you set
am I allowed half?
You're allowed half.
I wouldn't go as high as Reese. I think it's a stunning film to watch, as in to look at.
To look at, yeah.
And I enjoyed the performances, but I would not want to watch it again. And It's a hard one because everything we've discussed is like, oh yeah, that was good. That was nice. But I still sitting here, I'm like, I did not like it. I didn't like the treatment of the characters. I'm going to go 2.5.
Oof.
That's fair enough. I think that's a lot more generous than some people have been on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For me, I'm 4.5 stars. Honestly, it's going to be in my film of the year contenders at the end of come December.
Whoa.
I wasn't expecting to love it at all. But I came away with it. I was a little bit blown away. I was kind of a bit sort of nonplussed by it. Probably partly because like it is such an exhausting experience. But I found that exhaustion like worth it. Like I enjoyed the anxiety.
Did you like Uncut Gems? Like I loved that.
Yeah, I loved
Uncut Gems. Yeah.
But I did not enjoy this, so
I think it's a different type of anxiety. Like Uncut Gems, obviously the stakes are a lot higher. But like this was similar in a way, I suppose, where you had no idea what each character was going to say or do next. But it was, as we said before, it's much more contained, so the stakes.
I think a lot of people, yeah. It's going to sing to a lot of people who have been through that experience to a lot more.
Oh, absolutely! I say particularly, like
Would we dare say an abusive relationship?
Yeah, I think it is an abusive relationship. Yeah,
I think the word is probably more toxic. Well,
does he glamorize that? Or do you think at the end she actually breaks up with him?
I think they leave. I think they do break up at the end. Yeah, and I think the way that kind of he apologizes in bed at the end and she doesn't acknowledge it and just turns the light off, I think is probably the sign that this is not going to go any further than it has in tonight. Tonight was the combination of
a build up. Yeah. All she wanted was probably a thank you and an acknowledgement there.
Yeah,
it's kind of like. I kind of read it as like they kind of exhausted their usefulness to one another.
Yes.
Whether that be sort of selfish or sort of romantic or the point they are in their lives, they've kind of reached where they're kind of not useful is a horrible word to use about two people.
No, but I see what you mean.
They're not useful.
He's used her to the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like he's used her for his film. And now his film's been made, and now he's had great reviews of it. Like, for him personally, he has now exhausted all of his kind of uses for poor Marie. And I think she realizes that kind of when she says, I forget what the question is exactly, but she says something like, would that film been as good if we weren't together? And he says, no. And I think that is the kind of the final nail in the coffin of the relationship for her anyway. And I think he might try and fight it and say, oh yeah, but I do actually love you. But really looking back, did I just use you for my film? And that's probably
he stole her voice, her story.
But yeah, I loved a lot about it. I say, like we said, it's not a perfect film. I'm not going to pretend it is a perfect film, but it will be in strong contention for a lot of my film of the year categories this time next year when the Odyssey Awards 2021
nice link.
So yes, as I said, if you are still listening and were listening right at the beginning and didn't skip through, that this is the first of three shows this week. Obviously Sarah's going to be back on Friday with her Disney show, but the Odyssey Awards for 2020 will be going live on Saturday, both here in your podcast feeds and on YouTube. We will see how well Malcolm and Marie does next year. But for now, let's go jump before we go to some Twitter.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Malcolm and Marie.
Oh, we had some good responses to this, I think.
So Josh Barton, friend of the show, always writes in. Thank you, Josh. Said, Malcolm and Marie is a film I just couldn't take my eyes off. Drawn in by the magnetic and powerful performances from Zendaya and John David Washington. They're both utterly brilliant, and if either of them wins any award, they best be thanking the other this award season.
See, I would never have a problem with that. Is that weird?
I don't think, again, anybody who's got issues with the films, nobody has had issues with their performances, really. Don't think. Kevin Brackett on Twitter says, brilliant performances, thought-provoking material, beautifully shot. Nice and succinct from Kevin. Kate Blowers, Dave, you'll like this one. Personally, I thought it was aggressively awful.
I'm not that much, but
I No, but I know a lot of people enjoyed it and don't want to take that away.
Oh,
from
that's
them.
Nice.
Ben Wheeler on Twitter also says, underrated cinematography, fantastic framing and style with brilliant performances. Script goes a bit AWOL, but doesn't feel too out of place from a genuinely passionate argument.
Yeah.
And the last one is from Dan Burden on Twitter, which he posted a link to his Letterboxd review, where he says, there are parts of this that feel pretentious and insufferable, and you flip-flop between who you dislike the most out of the pair. Yeah, it is engrossing purely because of the strength of the chemistry between the two actors who ping off each other like fireworks, and you can pick up out the exact scene they will roll for when they announce Zendaya's awards. Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they've missed the boat for this year, but I would be astonished if Zendaya isn't. I mean, she didn't get a Globe nomination, I don't think, so I think they may have missed the cutoff.
Yeah, but let's be honest, the Globes are not the best thing to...
I mean, the Globes...
There's a reason why we're not talking about them at the beginning of this episode.
Yeah, but I would be astonished if she's not in...
Like you said, all I've seen her before is... Amongst the favourites. All I've seen her before is Spider-Man. I think she's great Spider-Man, but this was, yeah. Excited to see what she does next.
She's great in Euphoria, to be fair.
I think she's... She's, to use a phrase Reese likes that I say, look, she's got the world at her feet.
No, we didn't talk about the age difference.
World at her feet.
No. But no. Is that's a whole other podcast, but I think if we're going to be honest, that might be pretty indicative of what's goes on in
that. Yeah, you're right.
I'm not going to pass comment on that too much for fear of some legal letters coming through the parents. But yes, that is it. So thank you everybody for listening as always. And all that leaves me to do is say thank you to Dave.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming on, and I hope you enjoyed being a guest and taking a back seat. And
well, I enjoy talking to you too, so that's always fun. But it's much more relaxing doing this way. Yeah,
I know.
They are chaos.
Crossover episode.
And of course, also Reese. Thank you to Reese as well.
Anytime, mate. Thank you very much. Can I also just do a quick shout out to you read his tweet out, Ben Wheeler. He's actually an ex-student of mine, and he's just got into film school for next year. So a big congrats to him. So that's very exciting. Yeah.
Well done, Ben Wheeler.
Thank you very much. Old,
but yeah.
No. thank you, guys. And again, thank you, listeners, for joining us. And we'll see you on Friday for Disney Show and on Saturday for the Odyssey Awards. We'll see you then. Bye-bye. Bye.